If you've been watching the sensible TV channels, which is just a few, or international TV channels, or following global media, now finally you see some of it in Indian media as well, particularly the serious broadsheet newspapers, although they've been very late figuring this out. You would have seen a lot of completely unusual and unexpected scenes from urban China, from the big cities of China. These are large-scale protests, angry, police are coming in. In many cases, police are dragging people, police are using very strong arm methods, they're using pepper spray, etc. Before that, we've seen videos from one factory, a big Foxconn factory. Foxconn is the big Taiwanese company that has the factory manufacturing the largest number of iPhones. The largest iPhone factory in the world is in China, run by a company owned by the Taiwanese, Foxconn. In fact, Foxconn is setting up a business in India as well. So some time back, we saw visuals of workers breaking out of that factory, climbing the fence and running away and walking back home in large numbers. And as I speak, you will see some of these visuals. We are sourcing most of these from social media and from Twitter. Now, you might ask me, how do the Chinese get these videos and pictures out on Twitter? Because Chinese don't allow Twitter. They have their own version that's called Weibo that they control very, very tightly. So how does it come out? I will tell you about that in just a little bit because that's part of the story. So we saw these workers rebel from there and then march out 100 miles away, 150 miles away to their homes in scenes reminiscent of what we saw in India with the first lockdown, when so many migratory workers walked back home to UP, Bihar, Odisha, basically the labor exporting states of India. The same stuff is now playing out in India. Now, you see many other visuals also, and I'm against sourcing these from social media, some with the help of Adil Brar, who's our domain expert on China. He's a wonderfully brilliant young man who's now studying in London, who's read Chinese, who speaks, writes, reads Chinese, who follows Chinese mainstream media, broadsheet media, Chinese TV channels and Chinese social media. In fact, when I say broadsheet media, TV channels, that's all CCP media, Chinese Communist Party media, because they own everything. Also social media, so he can figure out the trends. He can also figure out, if you follow his Twitter handle, Adil's Twitter handle, he can even figure out when Chinese government or authorities are trying to spam Twitter in such a way that fewer of these videos coming out of China can be seen. And also within China, to distract people's minds away, attention away, they are now filling up Weibo and other Chinese social media handles with pictures of semi-clad young women, also of escort agencies, etc., etc., to divert people's attention away from what's going on the streets. What's going on the streets, on the other hand, is something unprecedented. In the past, we've seen some protests break out in some parts of China. Some time back, in fact, I will share a link with you. Some time back, I had done a CTC episode on protests in some parts of China because of some bank failures, right? So that was one. Similarly, in episode 978, again, I will share a link with you. We had talked about what had happened in Shanghai because of COVID lockdowns. Again, people had got very upset because Shanghai had been locked down for months because of China's zero COVID policy, which is at the root of what's going on right now also. So that episode of Cut the Clutter was titled Mass Crisis and Pain in Shanghai, Reeling Under COVID Crackdown with Chinese Characteristics. That was 978. This is about 1120. So you can say that was about almost two and a half months back. Now, what was confined to Shanghai has now spread all over China. So again, what do we do? See this tweet from Damien Simon, who tweets with the handle called Detresfa, D-E-T-R-E-S-F-A. And you might remember that we saw a lot of him when the India-China border crisis was going on, because he runs a very sharp open source intelligence site. So see some of the pictures he's putting out. And in this case, it's a map. It's a map that tells you where all have these protests broken out. And when you look at this map, it looks like the protests have broken out in large parts of China. That is the difference this time. So if I read an article from Patrick Wintour. Patrick Wintour is the diplomatic editor of The Guardian. He says, look, people immediately are tempted to compare this with 1989. That is the Tiananmen uprising. But he said, look, Tiananmen uprising, all right, it was much more intense. There was leadership today in today's protests, which are all against, essentially again, the spark is provided by China's draconian COVID lockdowns. But in the case of Tiananmen, everything was confined only to Beijing. Now these are widespread. So that is the important thing. Then you see in Beijing also there are protests, and see a series of tweets that Anant Krishnan, the correspondent of The Hindu in Beijing, he's again a very smart journalist, he knows the language, he understands it, he studied it there seriously. He also briefly worked with me in India Today magazine when I was there in my second stint. I think the world of him. He's posted these live from Beijing. And if you see these, you can see there are lots of crowds. These are well-heeled crowds. These are not sort of rural peasants. These are well-heeled urban crowds, which are coming out in protest asking for freedom. Freedom from what? Mainly, right now the spark may be freedom from COVID curbs, but it is becoming a larger yearning for democratic freedom. So in one of the videos that he's picked up and shared, the crowd is actually playing John Lennon's Imagine. Remember Imagine? Remember the days of the Beatles? I know every generation knows the Beatles. I don't think that's going to change. But even so, if you are one of the few who may not remember the words of Imagine and the environment at that point, the anti-war mood, popular culture's call for peace, then I can read out some for you, because you can hear these in the song being played in the video. And this is Imagine There Is No Heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above all sky. So this is a yearning of for freedom. And then it goes on. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Now again, yearning for freedom. Now this is being played at these protests in Beijing. So you know that Xi Jinping has something to worry about. There is much else. For example, there is this one that shows that protesting crowds are now coming to what is called as mid-third ring road, which means you're coming to the heart of Beijing, close to the heart of Beijing, which is not something that you would imagine happening in Xi Jinping's China. That too, just 5 weeks after he got elected for the third term as China's ruler, which is unprecedented. Lhasa, capital of Tibet, has been locked down now for 3 months, more than 3 months. So people are getting fed up. People are getting fed up of these lockdowns, and people are getting fed up of this draconian, dictatorial fixation with a zero COVID policy. The Chinese think that they have the power to keep the virus away. Now, you know what? Everybody's tried. And you know the kind of virus this is? I don't think anybody but God Almighty can keep it away. And God Almighty obviously hasn't been trying for 2.5 years. God Almighty is telling you, listen, get the vaccine, get those shots, get good vaccines, get good vaccine shots. That's the only thing that will protect you. So even if you now get infected, this will not be a serious disease. So if you look at our country, for example, looks like everybody's got infected at some point of time. So until the Delta wave, it was very bad, but then our vaccinations picked up. When Omicron came, India more or less breezed through with it. So you have to be very humble. You have to have humility talking about this virus. But the fact is that the most of the world has now moved on from the virus. The Chinese, on the other hand, are now discovering the virus and also figuring out how no amount of state power works when it comes face to face with this virus. You have to deal with this virus either by letting your population get infected, as the Swedes did early on, or you have to follow an approach like the Western world and India also followed for some time, that is flatten the curve, which means try and delay the spread of infections as much as possible until your infrastructure was built. And the third is zero COVID. Now, zero COVID is also that some countries tried in the very beginning. I think Australia, New Zealand tried this. A couple of other countries also tried. But in the course of time, they also discovered that you have to find a way of living with the virus. But the Chinese have decided not to live with the virus. So anytime in any city, even if a few cases come up, they lock down the entire city until people began to chafe. And then in city after city after city after city, people began to protest. So people began to protest. And when you have such a tense environment, when people are so keyed up and people are on the edge, and something or the other provides the spark to the situation. That came up on November 24 in Urumqi. Urumqi is the capital of Xinjiang, or what used to be called Xinjiang. That's where the Chinese Uyghur minority is, which is predominantly almost entirely Muslim, and where a lot of excesses have been carried out, because Chinese Communist Party has been trying to sinicize this population as they've been trying with Tibet. It was in Urumqi, in fact, the capital of Xinjiang, that a high-rise building caught fire in which 10 persons got killed. Now, immediately word spread, and you know what? Then you control the media. When you don't allow free flow of information, then people don't have any trustworthy sources of information. In these cases, all rumors become true, and the worst rumors become the truest. So rumors spread that, look, these lives were lost only because the building was locked up. Because of the lockdown, nobody could go to help people in the building. Because of the lockdown, buildings' exits and doors were locked, so people could not come out. Chinese government tried to deny it, but people came out on the streets. Thousands of people came out on the street and with fists in the air and shouting angry slogans. Now, that is not something the CCP wants to see, particularly in the capital of Xinjiang. So there was a crackdown there. But then, you know what? This had an echo elsewhere in the country. So maybe for the first time in the rest of China, in mainland China, protests arose in sympathy with what had happened in the Uyghur part of China, in Xinjiang. And that's how these protests then picked up. Shanghai protests picked up. Shanghai actually has a road called Urumqi Road, which is named after Urumqi, right? So there, that became the kind of epicenter of these protests. And slogans there were like, serve the people, we want freedom. We don't want health codes. Now, what are health codes? Health codes are mobile apps in China. So anybody, every Chinese, anybody living in China has to have this health code mobile app, which basically tracks your COVID status, your vaccination status, your testing status. You have compulsory testing almost every other day. You have to line up and be tested. You know, it's not pleasant to be tested for COVID. If it has to be done, must be done. So no, don't hesitate from it. But if you are told by law to have yourself tested every other day if you want to leave your home, even in a city that doesn't have a lockdown, it can be quite onerous. So this mobile app, you go anywhere, any public place in China, you have to scan your mobile app. They'll check out. Also, they'll check out who you've met. Did somebody you meet have COVID since you met them? I had a brief experience of this when I made a visit to Singapore a couple of months back. And there, even before you take the flight, you have to download this app, and then this app sort of follows you, and you have to keep it on for 40 days after you've left Singapore. This is very intrusive, but imagine having it with you all the time, and again, getting tested every alternate day and have your data updated there. So look at the slogans that came up. They were very colorful slogans, and these are not what you expect in China, and that too Xi Jinping's China. And certainly, these are not the kind of slogans or kind of scenes that Xi Jinping wants the world to see, because he's just been building this discourse about declining American power, declining Western power, and rising Chinese power, and saying this is the century of Asia. But when he says Asia, he means driven by or led by China. This, on the other hand, conveys a completely different story, completely different picture, and he doesn't like it. And the young Chinese have also found really, really creative ways of protesting. For example, look at these pictures. These are students of Tsinghua University. Tsinghua University is the elite of the elite. A lot of China's Chinese Communist Party's top leaders come from this university. So students, what is this strange equation that they are showing on their placards? This is the Friedman equation. A Friedman equation, don't ask me what it is. It's something in sort of deeper math, between math, cosmology, something. But Friedman is the key word here. So freedman, free man. So this is actually a code for freedom. Again, a very large set of protesters. The popular placard that they are using is just a blank sheet of paper. And see these visuals. Blank sheet of paper. What this means is, bolne ki azadi do. Give me the freedom to say something, right? So this is again a way of conveying that message. And this is becoming such a popular mode of protest. In some parts of China, particularly in major cities, they have banned the sale of plain paper. Look at this notice, for example, in Shanghai. Now, where all have the protests broken out? Protests have broken out in all the elite universities of China. As I said earlier, this is different from Tiananmen in the sense that there is no leadership, there is no core leadership, but protesters everywhere seem to know what's going on. So the essential difference is, it may not be as strong as Tiananmen was, but it's much more widespread, much more diffused than Tiananmen was. And second thing is, now this is a time of hyper-communicated societies and social media. So the Chinese, no matter how much they try to keep it under the wraps, they can't do it. I told you earlier that all of this is coming out on Twitter, and I knew that you will ask me, how do people access Twitter in China when Twitter is banned? People are using VPN, and once you use VPN, then it's very easy to get past these restrictions. That's why you'll find that even Government of India also, in new IT policies, etc., is trying to get around to VPN. It's a Tom and Jerry game. If they come up with something, the other side will come up with something else, because, you know, the mass always has more power than the state. That is what we are seeing right now in China. Now, this mood has been building up in China. October 16, when the Chinese Communist Party Congress took place, just before that, a couple of days before that, at a big prominent Beijing neighborhood, that is Heidian neighborhood, across a bridge, like a road over bridge, big banners came up. What did the banners read? I'm giving you the English translations. Banners read, "No COVID test, we want to eat. No restrictions, we want freedom. No lies, we want dignity. No cultural revolution, we want reform. No leaders, we want votes." Votes? In China? In Xi Jinping's China? "By not being slaves, we can be citizens." Right? And the second banner said, "Go on strike, whether it's school or work. Remove dictator and national traitor, Xi Jinping." This came up in Beijing. So that tells you that some mood has been building up in China. Now, the big problem behind this is the Chinese vaccine. Now, you might say, why are the Chinese so tense about this? Why are they so scared of even a few cases? By the way, China now has the highest number of daily cases in the world. This Sunday, I record this on Monday, but this Sunday, the Chinese has 40,000 cases. In contrast, and I know that again, one has to be humble, India has been through a million cases a day. In contrast, India's cases now were 140. Maybe that's because we just let the virus wash through our population, which the Chinese have not done. That is to give the Chinese the benefit of doubt. But you know what? Vaccinations. Chinese have vaccinated almost as much of a percentage of their population as we have done in India. So why are they so scared? They are so scared because they don't trust their vaccine. The Chinese had three vaccines, Sinovac, Sinopharm, and CanSino. The vaccine that all of China has used predominantly is Sinovac. And Sinovac has been the vaccine they predominantly exported also. WHO approved their vaccine. They approved our Covaxin, but then withdrew that approval. But they won't have the courage to withdraw that approval from Sinovac. But the fact is that most countries that bought Sinovac, including many African countries, then just dumped it. They destroyed the supplies. They did not use it. In many countries, like say the Middle East, where they used Sinovac, now they've given their citizens or their residents boosters with other vaccines, not Sinovac. And in all formally seen research, most of it's come from China, it seems that Sinovac is no more effective than 60% in preventing serious disease. Whereas the other vaccines, say Moderna, Pfizer, about 90% plus for serious disease, not for preventing infection. Covishield, with most of us have had in India, say about 90% or 92% Indians have had Covishield, which is the AstraZeneca or Oxford University vaccine. That has upwards of 85% or so. But the Sinovac, even in research that's come out, sort of research with Chinese characteristics, that's about 60%. But it's widely believed or suspected in the world that the effectiveness is no more than 30 to 50%. It's a dud vaccine. And because it's a dud vaccine, the Chinese authorities don't trust it with protecting their population from large-scale destruction or deaths or serious sickness in case the virus really spreads, so they want to stop it. And second, they've taken vaccine nationalism to another extreme altogether. So in India also, we saw vaccine nationalism. We had our own vaccine, which is Covaxin, which came out around the same time, which was approved in India around the same time or almost exactly the same time as Covishield, which had been approved overseas earlier, including in Britain. But because there was a realization that Covaxin production cannot keep pace with India's needs, right? The import market was opened up for Covishield, not for importing the vaccine, but importing the technology so the vaccine could be manufactured in India. So this vaccine was manufactured by Serum Institute of India in Pune, and that vaccine is what was pumped into the arms of almost 90% or maybe even a little over 90% Indians. The Chinese didn't do it. It was too much of a loss of face for Xi Jinping. So he said no foreign vaccine, not even AstraZeneca vaccine, or what we call as Covishield. Although the lab and the company had waived their patent, but he didn't want it. He just wanted the Chinese vaccine. Now, if his government or if his party trusted the vaccine, why would they go in for such draconian lockdowns for such a long time? And if his people trusted the vaccine, why would they worry so much? The fact is, all data that's available globally and accepted globally tells you that 1 in 5 of the Chinese above the age of 60 has not taken the vaccine because they don't trust it, mostly because they don't trust it. We didn't see that kind of vaccine hesitancy in India. Now, the Chinese population is much older than India's. China's average age is about 39. India is between 28 and 29, maybe 28 and a half or thereabouts. So the Chinese have much more of the older population. China's population above the age of 60 is more than 20% now and rising very fast. In India, it's about 11-12% and rising, but again, less than half of China's. So the Chinese really worry about their older population. And then you know what? Although China is a much richer country than most Asian countries, but the fact is that China's availability of ICUs per 1 lakh people is not so great. It's just over 3 in China. Because in more developed countries, it's a lot more. But if you look at China, it says 3.6 beds per million people. Okay, just to be fair, because I know comparisons are immediately made. India is 2.3. So India is lower. But you know, when Delta wave came, then there was a lot of emergency stuff was done. The Chinese obviously don't want to risk having to do that because all that will get out in the world through these technology loopholes, which they cannot plug even with their enormous power. So if they are not able to now plug these videos going out, how will they plug any videos, pictures going out if they have a COVID crisis of the kind, God forbid? We should not wish our neighbors or anybody ill, but God forbid something like the Delta wave strikes the Chinese population now, and that's why they are scared. That's why the Chinese want to put it down. So I will share with you one more tweet, one more picture that Adil Brar has shared of large transport trucks bringing in riot control vehicles into Beijing. So that tells you the state of affairs in China right now. Now, I will conclude this by telling you a story. It's a story, a joke, an apocryphal story, whatever you call it. And you know what? This does not mean, I have to put this disclaimer out of the way, this does not mean any insult to human beings or to dogs. But this is the oldest story that you will hear from Indian Army, particularly units which serve on Nathula, which has a border outpost between India and China. So the story is their dog was running away from the Indian side trying to cross into China. And as the Indian dog was crossing into China, it ran into a Chinese dog running away from China and trying to cross into India. So the Chinese dog asked the Indian dog, why are you going to China? So the Indian dog said, look, I'm not quite starving, but I know food is, I mean, we are not such a rich country. I believe yours is a rich country. There's a lot more to eat in my country. The story goes back to the 60s when India and China had that famous clash at Nathula in 1967, and India was dependent on food imports and living a ship-to-mouth existence. So the Indian dog said, look, baki sab to theek hai, khane ke liye zara kami hai, you know, it's a little shortage of food. So I thought, I've heard that your country has plenty of food, so I'm going there. But tell me, why are you going to India if your country has enough food? So the Chinese dog said, or okay, the Chinese dog apparently said, there is plenty of food where I come from, but there is no freedom to bark. So that's the reason I'm going to India. So you got the message from the story. People need prosperity, but people also need freedom. And freedom of speech is an essential part of that.